Welcome to the Relative Powers podcast. We are a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I am Mark Phoenix.
And I'm Ben Hutchings.
I am full of sweet corn fritters at the moment, so I'm not too sure how that's going to affect my podcasting and performance.
This is your pre-podcasting disclaimer, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So if in case anything kind of goes wrong, then it's the fault of big fritter subvert in our podcast. But anyway, this week we are not talking about sweet corn fritters. We are talking about security. It's a concern of everybody in the web, particularly now. There seem to be more and more high-profile stories of big hacks, of organizations losing passwords and details getting out into the wild and all the kind of fun things that can happen when that results. So it's something that we should be concerned about. And so to help us, we have a proper security person who's going to talk us through some things. So we'd like to welcome to the show Tim Nash.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome to the show.
Hi.
So we'll talk a bit about what you do, because security is a concern for you in your sort of day-to-day sort of role, isn't it? So what do you do at the moment? What's your role?
So I am the WordPress platform lead for 34sp.com, who are a web host. And specifically, I work on the managed WordPress hosting. So you'll have seen managed WordPress hosting popping up all over the place at the moment, and it's our particular offering. And obviously, security is something that every web host takes incredibly seriously and is a problem across the industry, and something we'd love to see people securing their sites, because it would make our lives so much easier.
Because you've been doing a round of talks about security, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I come from a security background. I come from a pen testing background, so security is sort of in my bloodline, and it's something that I'm very passionate about. And obviously, when it comes to when you've got a managed product. We take a lot of the security and do a lot of the security for people. But the best way to get sites secure is for education. So myself and my colleagues are always out and about. And recently I've been giving talks at WordCamps, which are WordPress conferences. And I'm currently touring the user group with some of my colleagues. And my particular talk, when it's my turn to go up and give a talk, is on practical WordPress security. So it's just really simple tips that anybody can do to improve the security on their site.
Okay, because you gave that talk yesterday, didn't you?
Not yesterday. I gave it 2 weeks ago. I gave a different talk yesterday. It's a hard life being I believe actually I've got an extended part of my job title that says developer advocate. And it turns out that means going around talking to people, which is probably a good thing for me. I gave a talk in Glasgow like a couple of weeks ago, and I think I'm next giving a talk in Cambridge in a couple of weeks' time, and at Web Staff's in like a week's time. It's starting to get that rock star lifestyle where I can't actually remember where I am meant to be 1 week to the other.
You keep your suitcase packed, do you?
Pretty much, though. Last night did involve a very long-winded train to get me home at 4 a.m. So I'm going to be booking hotels from now on.
Good stuff. Because I think I sort of, because Ben, you kind of host with 34SP, don't
I do.
You?
Yeah. Yes, I got two. I do. Yeah, personally, I've got a few accounts with them. And then about three of my clients have actually got accounts with them as well.
Yeah. Because you've met him in the flesh, haven't you?
I kind of hounded him a little bit at WordCamp London. But I think that's possibly the first time we'd had a proper conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's dealt with a lot of my support tickets.
when support requests come at you in human form, I'm sure that's fun.
Something we really enjoy, and that's why we go to these events, and why we specifically take not just me but actually take our WordPress team. And so the people who deal with the support queries are going to these events, and it's quite interesting to see how they react when a human being is standing in front of them going, but I need you to help me fix my site. It's all good, we love it.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. And you also mentioned on your website that you try to get involved in the WordPress.org support forum. So again, are you looking out for sort of security questions or security concerns on there, or is it just all sorts of things that you try to help out with on there?
Well, all sorts of things. So I'm a moderator on the WordPress.org support forums. I don't do as much as I should do. I always feel like whenever I'm in the support meetings, I always feel like the bad boy who's not doing as much as he could be doing. But actually, a lot of what I do day to day with the support forums is actually dealing with the spam and people making silly comments, and so getting rid of those so people don't see them. But when I can, if I spot a security problem, I tend to jump in there. I also tend to be hopefully the person who is being reasonable and saying, trying to break up a few arguments when they occur. So it's a balancing act, but I would love to be doing more support tickets, which sounds mental. And I'm sure my colleagues on who actually are support people for their day jobs must think I'm mad, but I'd love to be doing more security support tickets. I just don't have the time.
So how is that sort of on WordPress and like org support forums? I mean, is it generally, are they generally quite good natured? Is it, I mean, you having to do a lot of kind of breaking up arguments and a lot of spam fighting, or is that a bit of a marginal problem?
Certainly the breaking up arguments doesn't happen very often. When people are frustrated and when they do have a problem, tempers always flare. It doesn't matter what industry or where it is. If somebody can't do something, it's going to irritate them, and that's going to cause them to be in a bad mood. So it's understandable these things happen. In terms of spam, it's a very large forum. It's got a pretty permissive sign-up process. We get a lot of spam. And most of that, for those people who don't know, WordPress.org support forums relatively recently moved to a new version of BBPress, actually making it powered by WordPress before it was powered independently. And that's meant that things like Akismet can be actually put on there. So the spam problem is disappearing slowly but surely. And we have an amazing team of moderators who are always on there 24/7. There's somebody there who's keeping an eye on the forums. So they are relatively spam-free these days, and it's nice to see. And it's great to be part of the community and not have to be worrying about doing code and other bits, which is something I love doing. But this feels like something that is just a nice extra thing you can do, and anybody could do it. So if you if anybody's there who wants to join the support forums, all you have to do is go to wordpress.org/support, log in with your account, and start answering questions. And I bet you everybody can answer at least one question on there and help somebody out. It makes you feel really good.
Absolutely. I think a lot of devs will probably be surprised at how much they know when they actually start to deal with other people's questions. So yeah, we endorse that message. Okay, let's dig into our main topic of security. Now, believe it or not, we do have notes. This show isn't scripted, as you may realise, but we do have notes. So in our preparation for this show, I think, Ben, you had an opening question, which I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's not really from me, but it's a lot of my clients will often say to me, if I talk about security measures or something like password strength and try and encourage them to use stronger passwords and things, for example, they will very frequently say, oh, who would want to hack me anyway? What have I got to offer? And, you know, I've got my own kind of answers to that, because if it's someone who's like a local window cleaner or a plumber, I do have some very small clients. And some of the larger clients kind of get it, but some of the very small clients don't get it. What do you think about that, okay, Tim? I mean, what are the reasons that people tend to hack?
Well,
or try to?
I think the first thing to say is they don't really care about you. In the vast majority of cases. I mean, there will always be that one case where someone is deliberately trying to hack your site and get in. And they have a grudge against you. You've clearly upset them in some massive way. The vast, vast majority are what we refer to as drive-bys. They're automated attacks being launched against hundreds of thousands of sites at the same time. They're looking for known vulnerabilities, and they just go from one site to the other going, is the vulnerability there? Yes. No. No. Yes. No. No. Yes. Targeting the ones that say yes and dropping some sort of payload on. The vast majority of hacks we see these days, we're seeing less and less sort of the traditional defacement, where someone puts up a site for effectively and giggles, going, hey, look, I hacked your site. You still see the sort of we've got a political message, or we've got some other sort of message and we're going to hack that way. But they're relatively rare as well. Normally, when you see a defacement, what they're really trying to do is put malware or some sort of advertising for some gentleman's products that you just don't need. but the real key, the thing that most sort of from a web hosting perspective you see, and how we normally know when someone's been hacked, is when their mail queue starts shooting up. So we start seeing lots of the site sending lots of emails out, and suddenly those emails getting bounced an awful lot. And that's where people are basically just sending spam emails. And they're using your site as a relay, so as a mechanism to send out emails, because most emails, if you start sending out a bunch of spam, the email providers turn around and go, no, we're just going to block that IP. So they need IPs to use. You are just being used to send email. It sucks. Right. But nobody wants to hack you. You're far too boring.
That's a good message.
I feel almost insulted now. I'm interesting enough for that. So what tend to be... So when somebody does get hacked then, what tends to be the consequences and the results for a site or for an organization? I mean, is it something that you think is, I know these are two separate questions, but is it something which is kind of on the increase? Is it something that we need to be more aware of? Or
I think, without stats to back it up, I believe it, I'm not necessarily seeing an increase in the number of sites getting hacked. We're seeing an increase in the number of different ways sites get hacked.
Right.
And often, one thing to bear in mind is if you've been hacked once, you'll get hacked again, unless you take steps to avoid this. And what I've certainly been seeing more and more of very recently is sites been hacked three or four times by three or four different people in different ways, which shows at least an interesting range of different attack methods and different attack vectors. In terms of... Is it on the increase? I don't think so, but I don't think that's a good sign, because there's far too many people being hacked. And what we're not seeing is necessarily an increase in anybody taking security precautions. So the plateau may just be because actually there's just not enough bots in the world trying to do these attacks.
Okay. So what tend to be the consequences then for you? So say you get hacked, what problems would it cause for someone?
It does depend on what sort of hack and how long and what happened and when was it caught. But a good example of sending out spam, as long as there wasn't any other sort of defacement, the IP that your website's on will almost certainly be blacklisted, so you're going to have terrible trouble from now on sending email. You obviously started sending out lots of it, and your own emails will start not getting through. If the site also, and remembering that if you've been hacked once, you're probably going to be hacked in different ways. If the site has malware on it, so someone's put up a page that's got a bunch of viruses, the idea is that they can get brief rankings in search engines so that people connect up and then they download the virus. Then you will find yourself starting to appear on blacklists generally. Getting off blacklists can take months and months and months. And the ultimate scary thing is when you go onto Google, search for your name, click on the link, and instead of going to your website, you get a big red page that says, "Warning, this site is very harmful to you. Bad things will happen if you carry on and proceed," which sort of ruins a business if you have to do that. And that can take a very long time to get rid of. So the effects can be pretty catastrophic if you're a small business. And even big businesses, unless you happen to have somebody who works at Google and similar, and you're willing to put in a lot of effort to clean up yourselves afterwards, the repercussions can last for months, if not years. So it can be really harmful. And obviously, if there's a targeted attack where your data has been lost, then you've got everything from the lovely people at the ICO, so the Information Commissioner's Office, coming to say hello to you, through to obviously the massive loss of trust in your business. That could be pretty harmful and damaging. Yet I can think of major companies who have been hacked and they're still in business. And you've got to start wondering how. I mean, when there's kids' toy firms losing children's data, you'd think they'd go out of business pretty quickly, but they're still there. So it's never insurmountable, but it is a lot of work.
I wonder if that's partly because the public don't realise quite how bad it is or quite what's happened. And you get these kind of clickbaity type of sort of news articles talking about however many million different users' passwords or personal details have been lost. And I wonder if it's something people are getting just a bit used to. Oh, there's another one of those hacky things, whatever that is. You know, it's kind of, I think maybe the general public don't really realize what's actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly from my own experience, my parents are incredibly technical. I mean, really technical for the.
This is not
for
their this generation. Is not sarcasm.
No.
And oh right,
they,
really?
No, they really are technical. And my mum taught me to code. So wow. She Great. When I was very young, bought a computer, remortgaged the house to buy a computer so that they could teach me to code because wow. computers were going to be important. They're very technical.
And progressive.
That's very forward-looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yet I've watched them sit there and go, oh, it's all right. There's a green padlock, so it must be secure. And I'm thinking, but you just weren't past the big red warning saying there's malware on the site. So you overrode the malware warning, but are happy because there's a green padlock. So somewhere there are mixed messages happening. So if someone's like that, someone like them are going through that process, and they should know better, then I suspect people who perhaps don't know better are just flummoxed. And there's always pop-ups and things. You know, there's a famous Simpson episode where there's just loads of pop-ups turn up on his computer, and I'm pretty sure there's many a person who hopefully not listening to this podcast, but certainly friends and families of people who are listening to this podcast, who whenever you turn on their computer is just littered with pop-ups and various other bits. So
yes,
how do you reach those people? I think that's the real hard bit. Actually, when I go to user groups, I am semi preaching to the converted, because at least they know that there is a problem and that they need to sort of do something towards it. Plenty of other people just don't even know there's a problem.
So that brings us on to like sort of a key issue that we wanted to sort of talk about, like whose responsibility is it? So, yeah, I mean, in your, because like, you know, I thought you'll talk about security is everyone's responsibility. There we go, giving away the answer there. But I mean, how do you see that sort of in practical terms, like whose responsibility is it? And how do you kind of encourage everybody to take responsibility themselves for security?
Well, I think we should start off by emphasising it really is everyone's responsibility. And everybody has different roles to play in that. As a somebody who's effectively a system administrator, I have responsibilities towards setting up the security of the servers, the networking, and the really technical bits that most people would think of as the hard bit. It's not, but it's one set of things to be done. As developers, there is the direct responsibility to write code that is secure, to make sure you're testing it, and to take security seriously, to make sure you have a mechanism so that someone can communicate to you if there is a security problem. I go and look at so many projects, and they don't have a dedicated email address for security concerns. Mm. And you're thinking, that's mental. Mm. Surely you want me to tell you that there's a security bug rather than me telling the world.
Yeah.
Because that's the options. If I don't have a way to get hold of you, then. So even something as simple as that, then when you're coming further down the chain, people who manage sites, so perhaps not developers, but they manage, they put sites together, they install plugins, they have a responsibility to look at those plugins, make sure they keep those up to date, make sure they keep their themes and WordPress core up to date. And then you've got your end user who's sitting there who has access to the site. They have to keep things like their passwords and make sure that their passwords aren't passwords, ideally, that they're passphrases, or they use a password manager, that they're using two-factor authentication, that they understand that they probably shouldn't click on the link that says click here for free £10,000 money just by pressing this button. and so there's all the way through this, there are just layers of security. And if we can even start with the most basic one of everybody using a passphrase or a password manager, we'll already wipe out an awful lot of the problems. So we can have all the other problems, but we can build our way up from there.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that a bit more then, because like, we just wanted to kind of to sort of take that sort of on each group sort of separately to sort of to talk about what everybody needs to do and also a little bit how we can do our due diligence as developers, but also as users, to make sure that those sort of things are happening. So when it comes to, I mean, for developers, when it comes to hosting providers, what do they need to do? But also, how can we as developers make sure that they've kind of, their security game is tight? What kind of questions do we need to be asking our hosting providers?
Yeah, so the first one is, are you 34sp.com? Would obviously be an excellent question to ask, but assuming that you've done your due diligence, gone beyond that. There are all hosting companies will want you to have a secure site. It's a pain to deal with hacked sites, particularly hacked sites that are causing problems with network traffic, sites that are being used as relays or being used as part of a DDoS network, anything that starts filling up the network or causing instability on a host machine. The hosting company is going to have to deal with that. Depending on the levels of how they deal with that, they might just isolate it and turn it off, which is less helpful, but you can understand why they would do it.
Yeah.
Through to actually helping you rebuild your site, sorting out backups and all that sort of thing. So there's a level of responsibility attached to that. But more importantly, before all of that, they will want to talk to you and they will be happy to have someone sit on support. And it's worth them having someone sit on support for half an hour with you saying, have you done this? Have you done that? Have you gone through these steps? And actually talk about how to secure your site, because it's worth it to them, because it's going to cost them at least four times that if they have to actually get one of the sysadmins to do the same job, which is taking half an hour. So
okay, so is that the thing to look out for then? If your hosting provider is willing to talk to you or eager to talk to you about what you need to do to secure your site,
That's generally a good sign. The other thing is that all hosting providers probably have some sort of at the system level firewall that they will be talking about. Normally there will be some sort of WAF, so a web application firewall. This might be something like Mod Security or NACSI, and these will have a rule set on them. And I know people find it irritating, but actually it's not a bad sign when you load up your WordPress application with your funny plugin and all of a sudden it doesn't load up and says, I'm sorry, you've broke this security rule, contact support. That's not a bad thing. That means the WAF's sort of working. Obviously, it's irritating to you because it possibly just did something to prevent your site working. So you want to be able to replace those rules and modify them. But actually, it's a good thing to find out that the company's got a WAF. Ask them what their WAF is. So ask them about their web application firewall. If it's Mod Security or NACSI, ask them about what rule set they use. They'll probably be fairly open and honest. I mean, for example, across our pro hosting, which is our shared hosting network, we use ASL rule sets. And for our other ones, we use a modified version of OWASP, which is an open source set of rules for mod security, which we modified for particular platforms. Other hosting companies will use different rule sets, but they'll be quite happy to tell you about these things, or should be quite happy. Some will say they do use completely custom proprietary bits. Some might use AWS's built-in rule sets as well. So they might, if they're hosting on AWS, so they might have slightly different setups. But they'll be happy to talk to you about this. Most will talk to you about what they can do in terms of DDoS mitigation. The answer is not a lot. If you're truly being DDoSed, it's hell. And black holing and nullifying is about the best you can do. But there'll be things like they can talk to you about fail to ban or a similar system for limiting login attempts on both SSH but also on your WordPress login. Asking them, hey, how do you secure my site, gives them the opportunity to open up and be honest about it. If they go, well, we do it really, really well, and give no further details, it's up to you how you take that. They might do it really, really well and not want to give you any details. But I always find, particularly with security, it's better to be open and honest than it is to say, hey, we do really, really good security. Yeah. Honest.
Okay. So that's a good thing to good measure to put out then. So just for people to ask, I kind of wonder how many of us do that. I wonder how many of us actually sort of make that.
Virtually no one.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a thing to bear in mind. I, of course, did that when I chose my last hosting provider. yes, hopefully nobody's got a polygraph attached to their podcaster of choice.
No, you didn't. You just got a nice pair of socks that you liked and signed up with them.
I did. Yeah. Okay. I will sell my soul for socks. So
that's all right. Plenty of people sold their soul for a notepad. I don't. We just socks are
stickers, socks. No, yeah, we give it away far too easily. So for developers then. So what sort of things do we need to be doing? What's the kind of low-hanging fruit for us?
Okay. So a few very simple stuff. Test your code. I know it sounds really daft, but actually testing stuff. Understand that when you write a function, think about how it's going to be used, and then think about how somebody who's mean would use it. And realize that functions don't live in isolation. So actually, something that's, it takes a lot, and it obviously adds to the development time, but unit tests and integration tests are a fantastic way of building defensive coding. And looking at then using things like OWASP SAP, which is a, and similar tools, which basically these are security tools that are designed to do attack your site or attack your whatever the code vector is. So it just push it, they do sweeps along your site. It takes ages and ages, but actually it will identify, hey, there's a cross-site scripting potential here, or the potential SQL exploit here. If you're using WordPress, WordPress has a load of built-in tools for sanitization and validation, and so many people don't seem to use them. I don't understand why. They're there. Just use the tools that are available. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of devs would just benefit from just realizing that there are mean people and that your code is a nice gateway for really nasty people. I gave a talk to a DevOps group, and basically at the end of it, I said, just be a chaos monkey. Go in and break stuff to see what would happen and enjoy doing it. I mean, I think most developers think security is this big scary thing that they can't get involved with and they can't dabble in. And it's not dabbling in to be security. The dev and security world are one and the same. We use different terminology, but really they're the same thing. So if you can get beyond the fact that the terminology is different, you'll find a lot of the tools are really similar to the point that I was looking at an integration, a security tool that was doing, writing special tests for security. And they're going, it's Gherkin. They're using the Gherkin, which is an integration language test. And they're just using it on the security side. Yet they've called it something differently. Why? It's Gherkin. It's exactly the same syntax. So.
I wonder whether developers spend so long trying to squash bugs and get code working and want a perfectly working site that psychologically it's almost damaging to then say, now, break it. Because normally you're going in the opposite direction. There's something that's not quite working. It's nearly working. Yes, it works. Right. Sign it off. Push it. Done. Next bug. And it's going back and actually trying to break something seems counterintuitive.
The other thing is to think about security right at the start. How are you going to break it right at the beginning, not at the end? Too many people polish something, make it shiny, make it work, and then go try and break it. And that's great, but if you haven't been breaking it at all the little stages, you're either going to be in despair because you've found millions of ways to break this site and now you have to rewrite the whole thing, which is daft, or you're just going to have a quick attempt and then it's over with. Whereas if security is sort of baked into your workflow all the way through, it does make you start thinking in a much more defensive way, and it will become more natural.
Yeah.
And even simple stuff, pair programming. If you have two of you, one person who's looking over and going, okay, well, what's part of what I do? I'm going to try and break that code each time. Writing tests that are logic tests, that even something, unit tests are basically logic tests. Normally when you're looking for vulnerabilities, it's normally when someone's logic is a bit too loose, where there's ambiguity in what the result should be. So writing those sort of tests will help find those issues as well.
Pair programming, building secure sites, breaking friendships.
Yeah, why not?
I wonder if it's part of the question that you, Ben, say that clients ask you, like, why would anybody want to hack my site? I wonder if developers sometimes we can feel the same. Like, particularly if you're churning out quite a lot of sites, you may not think that any of your sites is kind of worthy of attention. I wonder if that's part of our mentality.
It could be maybe if. I wonder if it happens more when developers are working on very small parts of code and very small units, because they aren't invested in the whole product as much.
Yeah.
So I suppose having an interest in the whole product, how do I actually want this to, after it's left the warm, cozy cradle and it's hit the big wide world, how do I want to stop it getting attacked? Maybe is the way to view it.
Yeah. another thing that I've come across is, I don't release plugins on WordPress.org, so it doesn't matter. And it's like, what? No. You've still released it, albeit on one site, it's still there. And as I say, while there are particular attacks against, you know, if you've got a plugin that's popular and well-known, people are going to target it and look at it exactly the same reason that WordPress is such a big target. It's used by so many people. So the more popular something is, the more likely there is somebody trying to get into it. Mm. But a lot of these attacks are actually automated, that aren't even looking particularly at the plugin, etc. They're just looking and they're just firing payloads at URLs to see what comes back. And your plugin could be just as vulnerable as the most popular ones to those style attacks. So it doesn't matter whether you're coding it for one site or for a million sites. You still have to take the sort of same level and the same amount of responsibility. It is, after all, at the end of the day, your code. Hopefully people are proud of what they write, or at least for the 5 minutes before they realize all the mistakes, are proud of what they've written. So... take some pride in it, and just take some pride for the security side as well.
Yeah. Is there a good place that we can sort of direct people to go to kind of find things out? Because, you know, I think there are certain things that, you know, when you're putting a site together that you need to do. How does somebody kind of go, you know, because we've got some new listeners, some listeners who are kind of relatively new to this. So where can they go to kind of find out what they need to do?
Oh, welcome to the world that is scary and full of bad terminology. This is one of the problems. Actually, finding good resources that are explain things simply but also give you actual practical examples are few and far between. What I will do is not name anything now, but I will get a couple to put into your show notes of some places to look at, because off the top of my head, I'm already going, panic. I tried to think of a name of one of them. There are a few out there, but they are few and far between. However, that shouldn't stop people getting involved and having a look. And as I said, we'll put a couple of starting points in your show notes.
Yeah. There's also, if we're talking about WordPress itself, because we sort of are. I mean, generally, a lot of this applies to just hosting in general, or just having a site live on the internet in general. Or an application, but WordPress itself does have a section in its codex about hardening WordPress, and it's a good starting point. There's a long way you can go from there, but it's a good base, isn't it? And because reading down through that, I think if you then haven't got 40 more questions that give you 40 more relevant Google searches to do, then you're doing well, because reading down through that, there are loads of things that kind of give you pointers.
Yeah, the hardening page on the codex, it might have been moved over to the developer.wordpress site by now, but the hardening page is a fantastic resource specifically for WordPress, and also links you through to some brilliant resources on actual functions that are inside WordPress for, as I say, doing sanitization and validation. There are some good people in the WordPress community as well who do write about security and are trying to push this forward, so we'll pop some bits in the show notes to make sure that there's at least somewhere to go and start.
Yeah, and just you talking about some of those functions that are good to use has just made me think also that I found it useful in the past, especially when getting to know WordPress, which was a while ago now, initially, was tearing apart the themes that ship with WordPress. Because you've got teams trying to use all the new functionality, haven't you? So, for example, we've got the 2017 theme must be the current theme. And they're using a lot of, this is normally just theme functions and things, but seeing the way things are done, if they have got input, it's sanitized. If they are dealing with translations and things or URL sanitization, it's done there inside the theme, which is a good basis to start to see how effectively automatic themselves, I think, are building a theme.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you agree or not?
Yeah, no, I do. I think, obviously, there's a few times where taking the base themes is possibly a bad idea, but when it comes to security, I don't think this is one of those times. It's good to see what they're doing. Also, things like underscores, which is a really minimalist base theme that's designed for people to build on top of, has a lot of really good examples in it as well. And there are theme developers on the whole. There are some good ones and there's some terrible ones. Obviously, that pretty much described themes. But when it comes to security, the themes are possibly more so than plugins are the place where you see really bad examples. Where you just want to go, no, why? Why did you do that? And I think that's partly because actually writing a theme is really difficult. To be somebody who is both someone who's really good visually and is a front-end developer and a designer, and then go and have to do all this PHP stuff and getting it secure is really hard. You're asking them to have a massive skill set. So I used to be very much down on people on themes and say that they were all bad. But actually, I've started to realize that actually theme guys, they get it hard, and the good ones are really good.
Anything that people need to sort of, so if somebody is looking through themes and sort of choosing to get one, what sort of things do they need to look out for to, you know, what sort of things will alert a person to know that their theme's a little bit kind of a little bit wishy-washy?
So the first one I would immediately jump to and say is any theme that bundles a plugin, or so where you get a theme and then suddenly another plugin has appeared. These are a complete bugbear of mine, because nearly always those extra plugins are a premium plugin that the theme is bought bundled together. A couple of the big theme shops do this. RevSlider would be the most common one I think everybody will have heard of.
Just going to say, yeah.
And the problem with this is that because it got bundled, the plugin got bundled with the theme, the plugin itself can't be updated because it doesn't have the user doesn't effectively have a license for it. So that plugin can only get updated when the theme gets updated, and nobody ever updates a theme because they make changes to it and they don't make those changes in a child theme. So they're scared to ever update their theme, which means that plugin never gets updated. The plugin becomes vulnerable. The plugin developers very responsibly put out a new version, but all these people who had it bundled with the theme don't get that new version. So it's incredibly frustrating to see, and it sends off massive red alarm bells. Also, I think themes that do more than being a theme, anything that's an all-in-one solution tends to make me panic, because for the moment you start adding layers and layers of complexity, you are asking for trouble. It's a lot easier, and this goes for generally, it's a lot easier to write something that's got a single responsibility. So a plugin that does one thing, or a theme that does one thing and does it really well. When you have to do 20 things and that complexity starts increasing and the scope starts getting bigger, it opens up problems. So generally in life, not just for security, it becomes a headache to manage and maintain and support as well. So anything that starts being complicated, probably a bad place.
Don't buy a washer tumble dryer, people.
Yeah, well, certainly not one that has a coffee machine attached to it.
Yeah,
we're not doing our white goods podcast.
Sorry.
Ben gets confused, but I'm seeing a lot of very enthusiastic nodding.
Times that I've inherited a site that's using a paid theme that's got licensed plugins within it. It's just so common, and someone like exactly like Tim says, someone hasn't used a child theme, so you can't actually update the thing, and it's a massive, you used the word bugbear, didn't you, Tim?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, and a good point. And I think sort of with WordPress as well, you mentioned that sort of in the codex that there's guidance and security.
Yeah, I think I'm calling it codex, which is a bit outdated. What's it called now?
There's the developer handbook, but actually the hardening WordPress is still in the codex. So the codex was the original documentation center. It is slowly but surely being moved over to a new system, but actually the hardening WordPress is still in the codex.
Okay.
Sorry, Mark. Carry on.
So whatever, again, with sort of, along with kind of your choice of hosting provider, your choice of CMS as well, they should have something to say about security, because I use Perch mostly, and they've got a lot of things to say about security. I think both Drew and Rachel talk quite a lot about it. And so whether you're using Kirby or Statemic or Joomla or whatever, then
there are other CMS systems out there. Oh wow.
You want to go and take a lie down?
Don't scare him.
but yeah, so I think whatever you're using, they should have, you know, they'll all have their particular tricks up their particular sleeves, and kind of a lot of things should, you know, and they'll hopefully alert you to the things that are universal that we should be doing across all of our sites as well.
Yeah, it's worth giving a shout out to all of the major CMSs. I wouldn't have put Perch on that list, but certainly the Drupal and WordPress, and to a certain extent Joomla teams, they all have independent, they have their own security teams who do a brilliant job, and they do have a lot of information out there. But it's often very technical, and there is, certainly in the WordPress community, becoming a lot easier to understand and digest for normal people. So it's a good thing, and long may it continue. I've never actually used Perch. I feel really bad because I know Rachel.
Neither have I.
But I'm sure their security is brilliant.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good, actually. Yeah. It's I kind of remember having a little exchange with Drew about it, and I think his final remark was, "We're not in Kansas anymore." it's pretty good, actually. I've sort of not had any problems with it, but anyhow, we'll go on to clients now in terms of what everybody needs to do. So we've talked a bit about hosting providers, what we as developers need to do, but also, you know, with the idea that security is everybody's responsibility, what sort of things as developers do we need to be encouraging our clients to do?
Well, ideally, we don't want clients. And the moment you install... if we could just get rid of that layer altogether, it would be fantastic. No, I mean, the moment...
Release the virus.
Yeah, the moment you in your system meets general public, and even so, that's actually even before that, but has people interacting with it, it's doomed. But in terms of your clients, so these are the people who are going to be running the sites. A few things to bear in mind: they only need to have what the roles and the permissions to do this, to manage their sites, and nothing more and nothing less. And only the person who actually needs those roles and capabilities and permissions should have them. I did a site audit for somebody, I can't remember when, not so long ago, and came across a site that had 42 administrators.
Wow.
Is that a default role or something?
And no, they were giving everyone 40. there were a few others who had editor roles. I don't know what they'd done to deserve that, but clearly they were fought out. But there were all sorts of people in there. There was the web company, there was the previous web company, there was the previous web company. I started seeing a pattern attached to this when you've gone through three web companies and they've all got administrator roles still. But this was a group of people who didn't really understand that giving everybody administrator privileges was really bad. And then the guy who I was talking to, and I said, well, you know, you need to audit this. Well, that's fine. I've got a really secure password. And it's like, yeah, but you don't know the other 41 do. Just because you're secured, when you're giving away the keys to the castle and you're not auditing where those keys have gone, it sort of all goes horribly. So a few things to always bear in mind. People should have the correct permissions. Not everybody needs to be an administrator to do their job. Quite often the boss doesn't need to be an administrator to do his job.
They want to be, though, don't they?
They do.
They always want to be.
When I was did building sites for a living, I actually created a super, super admin role, which basically had no permissions and just gave the boss that.
Good idea. Yeah.
It stripped out anything that was too dangerous and gave them nice permissions, but made them feel brilliant. Really happy. Likewise, their secretary definitely doesn't need the admin role. A number of places where the HR person or somebody who is an office admin has an administrator role, and the reason why is because the boss need to do the same thing as the boss can do, and obviously, so that meant they needed the same role as their boss, which was equally as confusing. But at least it was better than them just logging in as their boss. So they got their own user account, which in plenty of places there isn't. There's just one user account that everybody shares. So at least there was some separation. But yeah, if you only add posts, edit posts, etc. in WordPress, you can become an editor. An editor can be given additional capabilities. The actual capability system in WordPress is really simple and easy to do. So you can just add capabilities to a given person if they need it. I actually run my own sites without admin users. I have my own. Okay. I have my user who is a editor user, and whenever I need to do something as an admin, this is the bit where I go, oh, I just pop on to Adobe CLI and either do it there on the command line, or I just bump my user up to a an admin user. Another technique that one of my colleagues uses is that he has a editor user that is daily user, and he has a administrator user with an insanely long password that he doesn't know. It's whatever the password limit was inside WordPress, and he uses the quick role changer. I think that's the right. No, quick user switcher plugin.
Yes,
to allow him to, and then gave his editor user the capability to switch into the admin user. So effectively, he's created sudo for WordPress. So whenever he needs to do something as an administrator, he swaps into that role. It works really well for him. Similar that if you don't have an administrator role, any users that are an administrator, then you can gonna get rid of some of the problems. Other little things that you can do. There are plugins that will allow you to enforce password strategies. But they all seem to come with their own decision on what password strategy should be, and they're all archaic on the whole. Convincing users to use good passphrases or password manager will do so much, and adding two-factor authentication would just, if everybody just went today and enabled two-factor authentication and put in and got themselves a decent password, the world would be amazing. It's not going to happen, but it would be amazing.
So as developers then, what sort of things can we do to actually encourage that? Because, you know, I found that, you kind of get mixed results, don't you, if you're trying to encourage somebody. I mean, I had a job recently where a poor company had a ransomware issue, and then they were, trying to get access to their server. And they were emailing me these passwords, and they were rubbish passwords. And you kind of keep talking to them and kind of keep trying to, to talk them around and trying to talk their IT company around, who should have known better. But it's just, it can be kind of frustrating. So what kind of things can we be saying to clients to convince them, do you think?
Well, a first option is don't give them the choice, because if you give them the choice, they are going to be lazy. If you can tell them that they can't, that, they have to use a passphrase, lie and say the system won't let them have a password. It has to be a passphrase, or you have to use a password manager. Enable two-factor authentication as a user plugin, enable it by default. Tell them that's how they sign up and do it. A lot of people are scared to put barriers in front of people saying that technology is very complicated, forgetting that there are only two generations who aren't used to seeing what was effectively the BBCB command line, which was, for a vast majority of people, a command line was their very first interaction with a computer. So we've sort of convinced ourselves that technology is now complicated and scary and everybody hates it because it's scary. But getting them to enable two-factor authentication, most people know how to use their phone. Those that don't, they probably grasp text messages. So we're not going much further than that. So enabling two-factor authentication and telling them that's how it's done, they don't have a choice, might seem aggressive and might seem like forcing it on them is a bad thing, but it will get the job done. Other than that, education, repeating it. I don't use the word password in client communication. I always talk to them about how did you set a strong passphrase and emphasize that side of things. I'm forever sending XKCD cartoons of their passphrase cartoon out to people. I've gone so far.
We'll link that in the show notes.
I've gone so far as to add to modify the language on the actual WordPress user end to say passphrases, just so that it's there and it's repeated over and over again, and eventually they might get the message. But it is hard. And especially if you're not in a position where you can enforce it, so you're the voice that's coming from one side and everybody's been doing it their way for so long, it can be incredibly difficult. Years ago, I gave a talk where I put the top 100 passwords up on a screen, and then I put a camera behind me looking at the audience, and we flashed the passwords up and said, "We've been stealing your passwords, So you will see your password appearing on the screen, and we could see people making visually gasping when they could see their password. We hadn't. We'd just taken the top 100 passwords, that known passwords on the internet, and put it in front of them. But it terrified them. So maybe that's things like that can be done. We're just rolling out at Fit4SP. And in fact, if you're on our managed WordPress hosting, you'll start seeing it. I might have already started seeing it, but we certainly will soon, that when you log in, if your password is in the top 100,000 passwords, and we're using a password list to check against, we're basically doing every night, we're hashing the top 100,000 passwords and comparing it to the hash that your WordPress users hash. So we're not, so we never know what the password is, but if they match, we're then flagging that, and so next time that user logs in, they're actually getting a banner saying, "Hey, your password's insecure. You need to change it."
Is that within the WordPress admin area, or is that only within when they log into 34SP?
That's going to be appearing in the admin area. So developers and site owners will have the ability to control the message a bit, but that's now going to start rolling out across all of our managed WordPress hosts, so that we can start pushing, hey, you've got an insecure password, you need to change it.
Good idea.
The problem with doing that, it turns out, computers are very good at doing password guesses, doing it efficiently so you don't accidentally take sites down is very hard. So we're roughly going through the 100,000 passwords, it's taking us about 2 minutes per user. So at the moment, we're limiting it just to administrators, and we're seeing how that goes. And so it's running on a nightly cron. But over time, we'll probably expand that once we can get that a bit faster, so we can drop that 100,000 down from that two-minute mark. Once we get it below a minute, we'll probably start rolling it out to other user roles as well. We're just concerned that we'll hit the first WooCommerce site that has 20,000 subscribers, and it's going to be, and it will just churn. So there's a balancing act to have, but that's something that we're doing as a host. But there are some tools out there will allow you to do exactly the same as a plugin. The only problem with doing that is that you can't do such large numbers of password sets because of the resource requirements for it. It's really something that we can do because we've got access to the back end and we're spinning up stuff to just get it done quickly.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that covers it then. Well, not covers it. That we fix security for the internet. But we talked a bit about what we need to do, the kind of things that we need to ask hosting providers, and the kind of things that we can encourage or try to encourage and tear our hair about we're kind of asking clients to do. We'll sort of think about wrapping up then. Any things in conclusion to add then, Tim, sort of when we think about this whole issue?
So security is everyone's responsibility. That means that everybody is responsible for having good, strong passwords, good, strong passphrases, using a password manager if you can't do passphrases. Everybody is responsible for looking around themselves and going, hey, should that person be there? It's the same as if you were walking, we hear signs all the time. If you see a suspicious package, let somebody know. You don't know who you're meant to let know, but let somebody know. If you see something suspicious, let somebody know. Always keep things up to date, even if it's hard to do so. Make sure that things are up to date. Make sure your plugins are up to date. Make sure you can make your theme updatable. Keep WordPress core up to date. And if you can't keep WordPress core up to date because a plugin needs to be updated first because it's got a bug in it, think about that carefully, which way around we should be prioritizing. Should we be prioritizing the plugin that is clearly buggy, or should we be prioritizing updating WordPress core? I'll leave it to people's imagination which version is a good idea. Doing simple stuff, going through the WordPress codex hardening, look at the file permissions and stuff, look at making sure that insecure file permissions, making sure that only files that should be executed are, making sure your uploads folder, you can't execute PHP files, for example, or EXEs in extreme cases, or shell files. Even simple stuff like disabling the file editor. There are some uses for, everybody thinks I'm very anti WordPress security plugins, but there are uses for them. Some of them do things like file scanning, so they'll look for changes in files. Again, this is something maybe your host does as well. And get good hosting, 34sp.com. But no, seriously, get good hosting. Talk to your host, though, regardless of who you host with. They will want to have a chat with you, so go and have a chat with them. They should be able to give you advice. And if they can't give you advice, they'll hopefully they have a good reason for why not. Maybe they'll just point you at some documentation that they have. Whatever it is, go have a chat with them. I think that's my my big advices.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, okay, right. So I think that is our topic. So we'll do a tool star.
Okay.
So that brings us to our tool star section, something that's useful for us as developers or maybe designers, a tool or a site or a system that might help us. And Tim, you've got something for us, haven't you?
Yeah, so I've been talking a lot and the general theme about update. One of the things when you leave everything to automatically update is stuff breaks occasionally and you get white screens of death or just generally things are broken and they don't look right. So there are plenty of monitoring tools that will tell you if you're getting a 500 error message, but I really like two tools, which are Visual Ping and Versionista. They do exactly the same thing, and they are visual regression testing, which is really just a fancy term for testing if your page has changed. They're both services and they're both free, though they have add-ons, and what they will do is they will take effectively a screenshot of your page and then a screenshot of your page a few hours later and compare the two, and if they've changed, they'll notify and let you know. They've got some really neat features, like they'll only take certain sections of the page so you can see if certain bits have changed versus others. But the reason I really like using these tools is they just provide that level of assurance. So when you get up in the morning, your first thing to do can be checking your email, not going to your site and hitting enter and hoping that it's not got a white screen. You can have a little bit of confidence that at least the page that you're monitoring is looking right. And you can normally set up multiple pages. Just something to bear in mind if you're doing it, if you have something like a WordPress blog and your front page regularly changes the loop inside because you've got new posts, keep that in mind. That might not be the best place to check. But checking right. things like your login page or checking that you've got a footer and a header at least gives you confidence that those two bits loaded. Hopefully that means the stuff in between should have loaded too.
That's brilliant.
But I really like them. So that's visualping.io and versionista.com.
Okay. I've not thought of doing that before. I've not thought of that way of monitoring. And I like it.
Yeah, it's not one I've come across before. So that's really excellent. Okay, so we'll pop a link to those in the show notes. Now it is time for the jukebox.
So Mark, you are going to excite us with a new submission for the jukebox this week. What is it?
Disclaimer, this may or may not be exciting. but actually, I realised that... Are we saying what this is? This is a jukebox section where we add a couple of tracks to the Relative Paths playlist, just so people know what's going on, just in case people are... We've blown people's minds and they don't know what's going on. But anyway, this is a track by Origami Biro, who very kindly lets us use one of his tracks for our theme tune, which I've just realised we don't actually have on the playlist at all. We don't have our theme tune on.
Don't we?
No, we don't.
How rude.
That is such an oversight. But anyway, I haven't featured many of his tracks because, oh, that's why. This album's just appeared on Spotify. This album wasn't on Spotify before. There we go. We're off the hook. So this one is Gathers in Puddles on the 2013 album Cracked Mirrors and Stopped Clocks. And one of the things I really like about their music is, like, it's a lot of natural sounds they use. I think this one has sounds of kind of people stamping around in puddles, lots of nice looping effects, and it's kind of very... It's kind of very electronic-y, but in a kind of a really nice sort of gentle sort of kind of a way. Very melodic. And yeah, it's good. So,
okay.
Here's a listen.
Okay.
So that was my track. Ben is being bad co-host. He doesn't have one, so he's in the bad co-host corner.
I've been listening to loads and loads of ambient stuff at the moment, but it's Yeah, I couldn't. There's nothing that stood out.
Okay, is it the kind of thing where it's one like
and nothing that wasn't under 73 minutes?
Okay,
so,
it's like one viola note for like 3 hours. Yeah, we're going to spare the listeners that. But Tim, you've got one for us, haven't you?
Yeah, so I've been listening to a lot of Postmodern Jukebox, which are a jazz group who take pop songs and give them a bit of a jazzy feel, and. The one I'm going to add to your playlist is All About the Bass, which I think most people will have heard the pop version, and I really like it. But all of their albums are good, and they're all on Spotify, so you should check them out, because I really like them. It might not be music that most people would want to code to, but it's certainly music that I enjoy coding to.
Okay. So, I mean, so you in our pre-podcast preamble, you mentioned you tend not... What kind of stuff do you tend to listen to when you're coding?
Yeah, so I'm unusual in that I think most developers like something that's big and heavy and fast and got tempo to it, and I'm the exact opposite. If I have something that's big, heavy and fast with lots of tempo, I sort of start drifting off and start not concentrating. So I actually go for the exact opposite. I like music that has songs that is basically something that I can sort of zone out, I can chill out to it, but I actually find that I actually work better when I'm listening to songs with words and actual instruments, which I know is a terrifying thought. So I'm quite happy switching from jazz, rock, and pop. But at the moment, I'm really into, Postmodern Jukebox. They've been on my Spotify playlist now pretty much for the last 3 weeks solid. They might stay there for a bit longer, and then they'll disappear off, and I'll find something else to listen to for a few weeks.
Okay. But we'll have a quick listen, shall we?
Yep.
No trouble, I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble, I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble, I'm all about that bass, I'm bringing booty back, go ahead and tell them skinny ladies that, no I'm just plain, I know you think you're fat, but I'm here to tell you every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top.
Okay, so that is our show talking about security. Hopefully we've given you a lot to think about, but also some things that you can actually use. And as Tim mentioned, we'll be putting a number of things in the show notes as well. So thanks for joining us, Tim. That has been really illuminating. So how can people find you online?
So you can find me online. I'm T Nash on Twitter, and my website's timnash.co.uk. And if you're at a local WordPress user group, chances are you're going to meet me and my colleagues at some point this year, and we'll be at the WordCamps. We're down at WordCamp Brighton, where my colleague Kaylee Thorpe is giving a talk. So if you're down at WordCamp Bristol, I've done it again. I've been saying Brighton like over and over again. We're going to end up driving to Brighton, because I'm the person in charge of getting us there, and I'm going to leave Manchester and I'm just going to drive us to Brighton and be going, where's the WordCamp? Why is no one there? She's at WordCamp Bristol this weekend. Her talk's really good. She might be at Brighton as well, but they haven't announced the speaker lineup, so I don't know if she's at Brighton yet.
That's okay. Brighton's really nice. That's a nice place to go for a visit.
Yeah, definitely come to one of those WordCamps.
Excellent.
Brighton's in August.
Pop links. We'll pop links to those in the show notes as well. So this show will be going up on our website, relativepaths.uk, with a comment thread. So if you have any comments, questions or concerns, then feel free to drop us a line there. We are Relative Paths on Facebook, Relative Paths on Twitter, Google+, and in all the social media things. We are always keen for reviews. They're really helpful. They help other people find out about the show. And we have a review to read.
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a feel-good review for us. This was on the US iTunes by a fellow named Lee. He says, I learn a lot from this show. Great guests. That's you, Tim. I love the two hosts' sense of humour. That's us, Mark.
That's us, yeah.
I'm kind of a noob, so it's nice to have one host who is a veteran and one who is somewhat new, although quite advanced in my eyes. I love the music segment. That Bonobo track is fire, and he did a little fire emoji. Keep up the good work, fellas. Can't wait for the next episode. And that's Lee, and he is eight-limbed on Twitter.
Thank you, Lee, for your review. It's listeners like you that help us to keep our show afloat. So if you want to support us, then please write a review. And if you have other people in the dev community, then let them know about our podcast as well. And that's always helpful. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll be back in your ears in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Tim.
Hello.
You can say goodbye if you want, and I'll edit it in.
Sorry, I thought my bit was done. Bye-bye.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I will edit that in. You're fine.
We're going to have to put that whole
No.
I think you should put the whole lot in.